Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Friday, January the 17th, 2014. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us, and we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. And today is Aramaic Friday with Dale Hoffman. But first, let's welcome Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. It's an awesome opportunity to be here once again. Forgive me as we speak if I wince a little bit. Yesterday we went hauling materials out of the building that had a roof collapse, and physical work has just not been my forte for a while. So I've got some muscles today that, you know, I haven't been acquainted with for a long time. So fortunately, I'm not running any races today. But we are blessed to have the opportunity to have Dale Hoffman with us, and Dale's website, if you want to check out more of his material, is www.daleallenhoffman.com. All kinds of awesome material there, and it is our awesome blessing to do Aramaic Fridays again with Dale. So let's introduce Dale and see what the young man has to share with us.
Hello from Panama City Beach, Florida. It's good to be back.
Oh. We're in Branson, and it's about, I think, 20, maybe 25 degrees, so send us warm.
Yeah, well, I think we're supposed to get into the 60s today. It's better than 20, at least. I'm down here at the, I'm actually in the home right now of a friend of mine, Marcus Bishop, Reverend Marcus Bishop. Marcus, he runs a place down here called the Life Center. Marcus was one of those sort of ultra mega TV, you know, sort of televangelists and prosperity, you know, teachers, et cetera. And he came to a point of reckoning where he just couldn't follow that path anymore. Everything seemed to be sort of deconstructing around him. And I've got so much great admiration, respect, and honor for the fact that he was able to walk from that ideology into something that's more welcoming and universal and loving, where everyone is actually created equal rather than all of the powers put into one person's hands. And this is our second time spending a bunch of time together. I'm down here doing some events at his place, and it's been exciting to be able to We really have a vision that we're actually going to be working on together of how can we help people that are sort of stuck in the ideology, or maybe not necessarily feeling that they're stuck, but feeling that somewhere within that sort of ultra-conservative, right-wing, fundamentalist Christian ideology, you know, some that feel that they don't know what else there is. So what we're actually doing is working to create some nuances of possibility for being able to communicate with people that may be within that particular structure that feel like maybe there is possibly another way or another path that's more open and loving and real and closer to the original Aramaic teachings. So it's been exciting. We're sort of feeling it out right now as I speak.
That's very cool, Dale. Congratulations. And any way I can support that, maybe, you know, it's been years since I've spoken in Panama City. Maybe we can connect in and one of these days get down in that direction. We're heading to Florida. But that's awesome because I think that opening the space for how do we live as the active presence of love instead of how do we get somebody. You know, to me, this work is all about conversion. But it's not the conversion. You know, in the non-being world, there's a cheap copy of everything real in the spiritual dimension. And the non-being world's cheap copy of conversion is, why don't you come join my church because we have all the answers. Whereas instead of that conversion, what we're looking to do, instead of converting somebody into a religion, is we're looking to convert hostility and fear-based minds back to love-based minds. And then everybody's going to know exactly the path they need to travel and the choices they need to make and how to embody that love that they are in this world in a way that really touches lives and makes for an awesome game of life.
It's, you know, I really feel that I've noticed that, you know, like one of the things I'm really growing into in the past year in my life is to be a bit less, maybe it's judgmental is the word, and having a bit more empathy and sort of even almost walking my talk even more so in understanding that, you know, sort of like in the words of Yeshua, forgive them for they know not what they do. And I started realizing just in the last few months I was just talking with Marcus about it downstairs here, actually, about how, you know, homosexuality would be, you know, an instance, how I really feel that a lot of the people that are doing the judgment from within sort of the Christian realm, whatever Christian means anymore, I have a hope in me that in truth they don't really hate homosexuality or they don't really hate people actually being able to live the life that they choose to live without having someone sniffing over their shoulder. It almost feels to me like there's this battle against that sort of stagnant ideology, old ideology of Christianity that's starting to, the structure's starting to fall apart. And I almost feel like it's kind of like a panic button effect that a lot of people are feeling like, hey, you know, we need to preserve this ideology because it's the only thing we know, etc. And I think that they're almost like spewing venom, hatred, and fire at whoever is within reach that doesn't fit in within that ideology. Conscious, active, present love to me, you know, Eckhart Tolle would say empty spaciousness, presence. But I've never heard a better set of words of how to bring that into being than just those words, conscious, active, and present love. I still have my original commitment that I got from you in, 1995? I still have the original commitment. I don't know how many versions ago that was, but of course, right then and there it was at the bottom, conscious, active, present love. And, you know, it's really time for us to live it and to be it instead of just talking about it. And it's beautiful. I'm excited for the future.
Definitely. And, you know, people lose that connectedness to love, and unfortunately, because they don't have the real Yeshua in the world, they have no idea why. I was observing a young man yesterday when we were working on the cleaning up the building that the roof caved in on, and this young man was with his father, and his father was 85, spry, vital, alive, outworked all of us, me included, like by far, and I am sore today. And I mean, this guy was just on it. And this fellow's in this space of, well, you know, I'm here to babysit and protect my father. And at every turn, he just had rage to spew at him. And it's like, excuse me, this is not protecting your father. This is violating your father. And of course, I understand why, because when you were a child, your father violated you. And so, you know, you're returning the favor. But when do we all grow up and change the game? You know, people say the words, you know, I'm really upset with you. And, of course, they're telling themselves a lie. They're not upset with anybody or anything. They're upset because in them is upset. And if they don't have an understanding of why they're upset, then they can't change that upset back to the state of love. And, you know, whenever anybody is upset, you'll notice if you've ever said those words to somebody, I'm really upset with you, you'll notice that you had a goal for them that they would not achieve for you. And the fact that they wouldn't fulfill your infantile demand, upset comes up in you. Why is that? And it's always linked to a goal. To me, this is kind of like always drawing people back to the core of the teaching becomes so important. We can go off on all kinds of rabbit trails, but going back to the core of it, why am I seemingly upset with what somebody did? And it's always because I have a goal that they've refused to achieve for me, and the energy that I spew out toward them, and it doesn't matter whether I'm in that, you know, that right-wing mindset that you're talking about, or, you know, the left-wing mindset, or the upper mindset, or the lower mindset, it really doesn't matter. If I have upset, it's because somebody's frustrated a goal that I hold, and I have a power person in my life. And that power person, when I didn't fulfill their infantile demands, spewed out an energy in me. And usually, not always, of course, the power person is a parent. And so I not only received that energy that they're spewing out genetically, but I received it from the environment in which I lived with them. And I detested, I intensely disliked the energy that they were spewing on me. But because I already had it built within me, like two tuning forks that are in resonance, there's no choice about how they operate. I just take on, as a child, that energy. And if I never learn to, and to me this is the Aramaic Yeshua's greatest gift to us, if I never learn to reach inside myself and forgive that energy, that is, remove what never belonged in me, right down to it, including the tuning fork, the genetic pattern for that kind of upset or disturbance, if I never learn to forgive, then I'm in trouble. And I'll find all kinds of people. You know, it doesn't matter. You mentioned homosexuality. If, you know, they have a goal or I have a goal for them and they're not achieving it. So here I am in my upset. Here I am spewing my venom that my power person put in me. There's a principle there that I think comes through clearly in the ancient scriptures. You know, and Paul had this piece, although Paul didn't know how to resolve his own dynamics, I think because he didn't understand Yeshua's forgiveness process. But Paul says, beware you who judge another, for then which you judge another, you've been guilty of practicing. And of course, in many cases, what did we find? Somebody was doing the condemning doing when they were in the back room, exactly the same thing. And it's all an energetic dynamic when we understand it, we can go inside of ourselves recognizing that I'm not upset with this person. I'm upset. That's all. I have upset in me. Do I want this upset? No. Then it's time to remove it. What do you call removing upset? It's called forgiveness, as it was taught 2,000 years ago. And it's such a beautiful technology. You know, that word shebag, to cancel. And when I recognize that the driver for the output of my mind, my current upset, is a goal that I hold, and I realize that what the Aramaic Yeshua was teaching was the canceling of those goals so that I could access what lie underneath the awareness in my mind and change it, it's such an awesome gift. Maybe you could, from the work you've been doing, maybe you could just kind of elaborate on that idea from the Aramaic, Dale.
You know, even without even going into the Aramaic, the thing that immediately comes up and kept resonating for me through everything that you were saying is that in the actual forgiveness process, that's the one thing, whether it's with the worksheet or even in a spoken manner, that people, it's the one hook for people is, all right, hold on a second now. You're telling me that you want me to cancel the goal that I have for this person in this situation? So I want a loving, peaceful, and supportive relationship, and you're telling me you want me to actually cancel that goal, that's actually that goal that's causing all of this, that's actually triggering up all of these thoughts and feelings and emotions, and somehow it's the fact that that goal wasn't met, so now you're telling me to cancel it. But look, this is a positive goal. I wanted something positive in this situation. And it's the funny thing, that's the one place where the people hook the most, and I'm like, understand, this is the forgiveness process, is actually, it's after all of the nuance of getting up to this point of understanding triggers, thoughts, feelings, emotions, it's actually the canceling of the goal that is the forgiveness, and it's keeping that breath moving and that love conscious, active, and present. And it's amazing because that's the one thing, whenever I read a book about forgiveness or even go to different sort of workshops, seminars, talks, whatever, it seems to be one of the most rare things that's spoken of is the actual forgiveness. They're not doing the canceling of the goal. They're not collapsing down that sort of pseudo illusory non-supportive reality. They're not even doing the forgiveness. They're just sort of letting everyone else off the hook and letting ourselves off the hook. And while that's, you know, fine and dandy and neat, I still remember the first time it was Clearwater. It was 1995. It was in the spring. And it was why, again, it was my first time hearing you speak. I went there alone after all these friends for 2 years had talked my ear off. You got to hear this guy. And I finally went, and I remember actually putting the pen on the paper with the worksheet process. And I remember sticking on that point of, all right, hold on, you know, cancel the goal. And it's amazing when you get on the other side of that, understanding that Eckhart Tolle would say, you know, you can't be fully present with a person in this moment and have true relationship if you're not able to be fully present in this moment with them. In other words, canceling the needs or the goals or whatever it is that you think that you need in this moment, that's what conscious, active, present love is, that it's open, it's spacious, it's whole. It doesn't come from a place of need or needing to have something somehow fulfilled, but it's able to be there, present, and conscious in that moment, in this presence. And, that's the thing that kind of gets me sometimes, is most of the forgiveness ideologies that I've been exposed to, even if the word forgiveness is sometimes in the title of the book or whatever it may be, a lot of times they never actually get to the forgiveness. So and that's the thing. And I've never seen it put so succinctly and clearly as in the Yeshua teachings. I've never, in only in Aramaic, it never made it whatsoever into Greek or any other language. But, so I'm clear of why I'm here on this earth, is to bring this out and obviously stand on the shoulders of people like you, who I love to stand on the shoulders of, although I'm sure with all your other aches and pains today, your shoulders are probably going to hurt even more from me getting up on there all the time. But, I think it's worth it.
No, actually, that will be a delight. If you're touching other people with the tools, that will be a delight, and I'm certainly in agreement with you on that. We, we've been talking recently about the project in Costa Rica and the Spanish community, and we're planning to head to Costa Rica in a couple of weeks, and we're going to spend 2 weeks living with a Spanish family and going to a Spanish school to start to learn Spanish. And it's interesting, in 45 years of doing this work, I've never been invited into a Spanish church. We came back from Costa Rica. We came to Branson to do New Year's with our kids. And there's a lady here, and we thank you, Joanna, who introduced us to a gentleman ostensibly so he could come and rebuild the roof on the storage building that collapsed at Heartland. And the Spanish gentleman invites us to his church. And so on Sunday, we went to his church and were invited by the preacher to get up and share a little bit about what we did with forgiveness, which, you know, I did maybe a minute and a half, and sat down and said, thank you. And he came over and he said, would you take over the pulpit next Sunday and present that for us? So, and it's interesting, the gal who was doing the translating for us, because, of course, we don't speak any Spanish, she said, yeah, the word forgiveness in Spanish is pardon, the whole idea. I mean, it's never appeared. It's just been void. It's been disappeared on the planet. And it just boggles my mind that the technology that is at the core of changing human life has been disappeared. And you know, you'd almost think it was classic Satanism that it has disappeared, that it's been removed from the culture. And even, I mean, the forgiveness experts, every book, go to Barnes & Noble and sit down, just pick up every book on forgiveness you can find. Well, did you forgive them? How did they make you feel? Did that hurt when they did that? As though, you know, we're innocent bystanders to our own internal dynamics, and it's caused by everybody else in the world. And the whole, you know, the ancient scriptures talk about there'll come a time when the whole world will be fooled. And it's 99.999% universal that everybody believes that they're feeling what they're feeling because of something outside of them. And it's so steeped into everyone's mind that even after they're introduced to the idea, they have to be reminded 1,000 times, oh, this is about me. Oh, why am I sitting here with my blood boiling toward my spouse? Ah, they didn't fulfill one of the goals I had for them. Why is my blood boiling? Ah, because I've got boiling blood in me. and I had a power person who played this dynamic out with me, and here I am spewing out the very venom that my power person, that I detested coming from my power person. And it's got the whole world bamboozled. And it just amazes me how many times somebody needs to be reminded before, when they're sitting in the middle of their blood boiling, they can stop, take a breath, and go, oh, yeah, this is my blood boiling. This is about me. Why am I not living in joy and delight and in my human life at this moment? My mind wants to tell me it's all about what my spouse did do or didn't do or did say or didn't say, but it's really about the content of my mind and the goals that I hold for them. And until I let it go, things are going to be crazy. And that, to me, is the importance of the forgiveness process. And, of course, anybody that this conversation might be new to, we would be absolutely delighted to have you go to our website, all kinds of material there freely, www.whyagain.org, upper left-hand corner, click the link, way up in the left. And when you click that link, there's an explanation of how to begin to use the Aramaic forgiveness process. There are radio shows where we walk somebody through the whole process, and we'd be delighted to have you share that. And as you begin to put the pen to the paper, and the important thing is not to know about it, but to do it, we'd invite you to call into the show and ask questions. Get a refinement of your understanding. Let us support you. That's what we're here to do.
And read the book and watch the DVDs. There's the nuance. And to be the book is such an easy read, and it's such a, duh, why didn't I think of that? I should have had a V8 kind of moment with the book, why is this happening to me again? Which, when seeing it on the way you do with the whiteboard as well, with the dry erase board, and the way you lay out the way the mind's dynamics works, and to see that, it's one of the coolest things for me. I think I mentioned it was either last week or maybe it was the first week that we, with the Aramaic Fridays, that I said how, you know, I love it. Like when I'm, especially why, again, sitting there in one of your talks, I'll sit in the back because I sort of have to sit on my hands because I, like in the middle of a lot of what you're saying, I want to jump up and go, yes, that's what it's all about. Oh, my God, isn't it amazing? I just want to scream from the top of my lungs because I've been there and I, oh, my God, what was it? Five plus worksheets a day for months on end, which sounds like this big, huge chore. And I think going into it, I thought it was going to be at Heartland that first summer in 95. And then it ended up being, I was going above 10 per day in some cases. It's amazing because the more you do it, 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 the more you do it. Writing it, especially in the written worksheet process, it just becomes maybe a bit of a second nature. I don't know if it's quite a second nature, but it's somewhere in the list of natures. And then it becomes more, it starts feeling more natural. You start realizing how natural it actually is. You're pulling those bushel baskets back off of the light so that when you're actually in situations from people and you've been doing the work and doing the work and doing the work, you're able to do it almost like what I call real time, right then in the present moment with that person, and you're right there in front of them. And rather than, as an example, sort of waiting to talk and you're holding on to that one goal, the one thing that you need, and you want to spit it into the conversation, and you're not listening to anything that they're saying because you're holding on to the one thing that you need to say, which is exactly like a relationship that doesn't have forgiveness in it. There's the one goal that you need from it, so you don't give a crap about anything that's going on in the situation, anything in the relationship, so long as your one goal is met. And a lot of times, of course, we're not even conscious that we're even doing that process. But when you can do it in real time and understand, hey, wait a second here, if I can just be fully present, conscious, active, present love in this moment and be with them in an open relationship here, understanding that if I'm feeling any kind of discomfort, then has nothing to do with them somehow causing that in me, but rather they trigger something that's already within me, of course. And when you're conscious with that, you can feel it right then in the moment, or it doesn't even have to be a one-on-one situation with people. It could be something you see happening on the street, something in a movie, something on television, something you hear on the radio, whatever it may be, a news article or something. And to remember, hey, wait a second, I need to breathe, and you start getting the breath moving, and you start recognizing the thoughts that are connected to whatever this is that you're holding inside of yourself and the emotions and those feelings that are connected in with that. And understanding, like, hey, I'm not able to be fully present in this moment because there's something I'm seeking from the moment that's in direct relationship to something that I'm holding inside of myself. And when you remove the mystic legs of the Aramaic Christians would say, remove the root of my suffering, to be so full, fully present with my conscious breath. I'm going to get some water. But I can actually be able to understand that it's something that's in me that's blocking the full presence of this experience, and by moving into that and being present with that, that I can pull the bushel basket off of that light, and that's how I can be fully present in this moment and exemplify that conscious, active, present love and actually have that full relationship with whether it's the person in front of me, the animal, you know, nature, trees, whatever it may be. There's no other way. There's literally no other way. And like I said, I've never seen it exemplified in the way that is in those in the actual Aramaic teachings of Yeshua. If you understand,
right, and we could put on that list, you know, the trees, the people. We could put, and especially the person I just disapproved of.
Yeah.
That until I can bring in, and there's the real, you know, the best definition there is of forgiveness is that remove the root of my suffering so that I can be that conscious, active, present love in this space with this person that a minute ago I thought was the problem and I realize is really giving me the solution. It's amazing. You know, you mentioned the DVDs, and I kind of stay away from that commercial-type conversation, but you
Yeah, but I can say it because I'm not you, so I can commercialize you all I want. So.
Well, I was just going to share that you brought to mind a couple of years ago, we were out in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and there was a woman who came to the workshops, and she shared that she was part of a Unity church out there, and she shared that she had been to the doctor, you know, this was several months earlier, and her doctor ran all the tests they could run, and they just said, we don't know why. We can find no reason for whatsoever for the what's going on with you, but you're dying. They just flat out told her, you're dying and there's nothing we can do. And a friend of hers, who is also a member of the church, brought her a full set. You know, we have 15 different DVDs, brought her a full set of DVDs, and she lay on her couch because she had no energy. She was, according to her doctor, dying. And she just watched video after video after video after video after video. And I don't remember, Jeannie, do you remember what time frame was involved before she went back to her doctor? It was a short time. I think it was 2 or 3 weeks.
I don't
do you remember, sweetie?
Yeah. I was getting ready to say about 3 weeks. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and she went back. She started feeling better. She started to be able to get up out of, you know, she was laying on a couch, and that was where she was living. And she got up off the couch and went back to the doctor, and the doctor, you know, was like, what happened? And did all her blood work again, ran all the tests, and it's like, you're not dying anymore. We don't know why. We don't know what happened. But it, all of her markers turned around and went the other way. So, you know, the impact of bringing, hearing the conversation and bringing conscious, active, present love to this field, as Yeshua taught us to do 2,000 years ago, and allowing that presence of love to delete, remove the power person dynamics that are the invariably the root of our suffering, is it's so simple, it's so elegant a solution that he came up with. It's so powerful that I will feel for eternity blessed for the fact that I got to play with the Aramaic Yeshua. It's just, it's amazing.
You know, one of the things that really opened a lot up for me, I remember, is the way you speak of it, like the driver for a printer. That'd be probably something, I'm sure you've talked about it a bazillion times on here, but that would be something that would be great to hear you talk about, how you can probably put that in the words even better than I can, because you've said it so many times.
Well, recognizing that, you know, there's some Harvard research that we talk about at this stage in the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop that shows that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, the max amount of information that goes into conscious awareness is 9 bits. So there's other evidence out there varying numbers, but the number's not really important. But the key is we get to see a little tiny framework of what's really firing within us. And once you discover what selects what it is that you get to see of what's firing within you, then you have the ability to change what's firing within you. And so recognizing that the goal is the driver, the goal is the thing that filters through all of the content that's firing at any given moment and allows certain things to come to awareness. I've often used the example of the little block game that you'll often buy for maybe a 2 or 3 year old child, and there's a square block and there's a round block and there's a star shaped block, and each block will only go through the shape of that particular block. So you can't put the star shaped block through any other opening in the little game or the toy. You can't put the round block through any other opening. They're designed so they won't fit. And the mind is kind of like that. And the goal is what sets the openings. And so if our goal resonates hostility and fear, and the only shapes, so to speak, that can come through to conscious awareness are based in hostility or fear, the goal is the key to the shape of those blocks. And when you cancel the goal, you can open the space, number one, for different information to come to awareness, and number two, when you change that driver, you get to the root of what has been resonated inside of you that's normally blocked out. And so the goal is the thing that determines which information we get to see and when it's canceled. And, you know, the most wonderful goal in the world doesn't matter. If I'm an upset, I'm an upset. If it's the most awesome goal that's ever been on the planet and all 7.5 billion people on the planet should have this goal, it's not the goal that's the problem. It's not the driver that's the problem. It's what the driver resonates in us. And so if I have a wonderful goal and that goal resonates rage, then I want to cancel that goal. That doesn't mean I can't ever have or pursue that particular goal. But at this moment, if what it resonates when I load it in my mind, if what it shows me is some form of pain or turmoil or rage or guilt or grief or fear, whatever it is, then by canceling the goal, I get to collapse the end result, the tip of the iceberg that I get to see, and I open a pathway down into the iceberg, to the root of my suffering, to the root of the iceberg, and I get to clean it out. I get to forgive, remove it. And then I can get on with that wonderful goal. And if I load that goal in my mind again and it resonates more hostility, more fear, then I'm going to cancel that goal again. You know, they said to Yeshua, well, how many times should we cancel these goals? How many of these worksheets should we do? Is 7 enough? And you know, the answer was 77 times 70, is as many times as you need to be done with the root of your suffering. And if your suffering is 1,000 generations old, you know, that word sin in Aramaic being an archery term, when you fire at the target and you miss the bullseye, the scorekeeper yells sin, you're off the mark. And until you've processed out whatever energies are in you that are off the mark, and there are generations and generations of those energies, then you're going to cancel that goal. Until you can load that goal, and all that comes forward is support for the purity of your being and the active presence of love, the genius and the truth of who you are. That's the real Aramaic Yeshua to me.
You know, speaking of hostility and fear, there's something that is in the Gospel according to Mary Magdalene. It's also known as the Gospel of Mary. It was originally written in Syriac, Aramaic, and she talks about what was called the fourth power, which took seven forms. And it's funny, the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, it's one of those texts where you get really excited, something amazing is coming, amazing, amazing, and then all of a sudden it's like text is missing for the next 30 lines or the next two pages, and it happens over and over and over again. So it's like we only have fragments of the text, but she speaks in there. What's written in there is that it says that she's speaking about seven energy centers. Gee, I wonder what she's talking about. That word energy center in Aramaic is haikla, which is the same word as church, sanctuary, temple. Yeshua called it the temple, seven temples, seven churches, of course, like the churches of Revelation. And she actually categorized them in the Syriac. But she had said the first one was darkness, which would be the root chakra, the chakra system completely closed off, no energy moving through the system. The second, which is desire, an overrun desire, or like the sex center run amok. The third is ignorance, which is not living from the gut. The fourth is the fear and exhilaration of death. Fear, and it's interesting because what is it, of course, that's beating out of your chest when you think that you're facing death? It's your heart. The fifth of those is the kingdom of the flesh. And one thing that's interesting about that is that's where you speak of it a lot, the root of the word sarcasm is sarx, which is the Latin root that means to cut, rip, or tear flesh. And I tell people, where does that sarcasm come through? What chakra does it come through? It comes through the throat chakra, the one that we speak to because we speak that into existence. The sixth is the foolish wisdom of the flesh, which would be the third eye, which is, in other words, not having open and true vision. Interestingly, though, the seventh, the crown chakra, when it is closed off, she calls that the seventh is the center of hostility, which is very interesting. She calls that the seven powers of hostility, or wrath is what some of the translations say. What's really interesting about that is when the crown chakra, Yeshua said we must be reborn from above, or born from above in John 3, talking to Nicodemus. What's really interesting about the crown chakra is when it's closed off, she's saying that's essentially the ultimate of hostility, is that you don't have an open interplay, an open flow with the universe, the cosmos, whatever you want to call that oneness, that one process. But yet when that seventh chakra is open, then we become what was called anointed, which of course is the word Christos. And of course anointing was that the symbolic physical sacramental process with the dabbing of the oils. I spoke of it the last couple of weeks, and the understanding that when when that seventh chakra opens up, they would call it opening the Christ chakra, that when that opens up, you become an open flow of the eternal and the infinite. And if any of those are closed down, what is it that closes a chakra down? What closes a chakra down is not being conscious, active, and present in this moment and having some sort of needs or sort of run amok desires or goals that it keeps me from being able to be fully present in this moment because there's something else I need to get out of the moment, rather than being whole and complete in this moment. And it's amazing because her supposed seven chakras, well, the seven chakras turned into the seven deadly sins, and it says that Jesus cast out seven demons from her, when that word demon in that case, Shadain, is a form of the word Shayada, which means unacknowledged energy centers, unacknowledged spiritual energies. And I think I talked about this in the first show, how the word cast out doesn't necessarily simply mean to cast something out, to throw something off. What it actually means is to stimulate the movement of. And, of course, it's a goal. I'm not saying not to have goals, of course. Getting the stress you need is a perfect summary of that with your work. But it's the unconscious goal that somehow keeps me from being present in this moment that's being the ultimate trigger of all these things that are coming up, all of the upset, all of these past illusions from my life. And a lot of it is illusions. A lot of people are still living, you mentioned, I don't know if the word was immature, but this like infantile, childish way of living. We're living from the viewpoint of ourselves as like a 6 or 7 year old. And of course, when you're a 6 and a 7 year old, you're not exactly always getting a really complete picture of life. it's like we draw all of these conclusions, not necessarily knowing too much about how the world works, not that we do even as adults sometimes, and we keep living and regurgitating from the point of view of a six-year-old child for the rest of our life, rather than actually having those moments of true presence. And to me, that's one of the things, is we need to let this grow up. We need to let the Jesus story grow up. We need to take a few steps back and just be honest about what's really there, because that's what's there is so incredibly complete in the Aramaic. It does not exist in any other language, unfortunately, in that kind of wholeness. All of the how-tos, you could almost say, are gone when you put it into another language. But it's amazing that the Gospel of Mary Magdalene is one of those ones that many of the church hierarchy said did not exist. It's not real. The Gospel of Mary doesn't exist. The Gospel of Philip does not exist. The Gospel of Thomas does not exist. They're all hearsay. They're not true scriptures. They're not real texts. They're not canonical. And then, of course, you know, early 20th century, all of a sudden here's a bunch of them. And they're like, oh, wait a second. Okay, well, maybe they did exist, but we just kind of forgot about them. I'm just completely honored to be in awake right now and alive in this moment when all of this is coalescing into this reunified vision of wholeness and oneness. The future's bright, and I'm just glad to be a part of it and to be in the middle of that almost, you could say.
I hear you loud and clear. I'm with you on that. And Dr. Tim is there. Let's say hello to Dr. Tim and see if he has any thoughts to share with us today and or any questions for you, Dale. I know that he's been working with the Aramaic Beatitudes and some of your recordings in the support group. So, Dr. Tim, how do you be, sir?
Are you there?
I be here. Are you?
I am here, and I stayed up late last night listening to Inanna.
Ah, cool.
Ina. And so, you know, in Dale has to plug Michael, and Tim has to plug Dale, because the announcement
okay.
came out yesterday that this was available, and so I ordered it right away and got the download and last night and listened. And talking about staying there, learning to be there in the moment and be fully present is a lot of what's on Inanna. And so congratulations, Dale, on that new release, the CD and the MP3. And I also not too long ago got the full packet of your CDs, the compact disc collection. And you're vying for space right now between Michael's Empowered to Heal, where he talks about some of the Beatitudes, and your two CD set on the Beatitudes with what's going to get played in our support group over the next few weeks. So,
well, it's a good competition to have. Yeah.
It is a
Thanks
great
for mentioning Inanna, too.
Well, it's fabulous. It's another wonderful piece of work. I have the word, and I've played that for the support group a couple times, and it's just a wonderful blending and deepening of the work that Michael presents in his videos, which we've been through many times over the past 8 years. And
yeah,
so
we announced Inanna. Well, yesterday we announced the CD version, and we got, I think we're somewhere hovering around 3 dozen CD orders, and about half of that in downloads too. So when I got the artwork for the new CD, Inanna, it time and space really stood still. It was a really profound moment of seeing, because I wanted the artwork to exemplify what was in it. And I had actually told myself recently I wasn't going to put any more single disc programs out, that I wanted to have things that were more comprehensive, but that one stood alone by itself so well that I felt like I really needed to get it out there. So thank you for mentioning that, and for mentioning, yeah, the Beatitudes ones, Home and Emptiness. It's amazing. The Beatitudes are they're a step-by-step process. Do this and this happens. It's not these theological promises that somehow you're beaten down and you're poor in spirit, and so that when you die, that all of a sudden you're going to be better. Or if you're, you know, horrible and you're mourning and you're having this horrible life, that you're going to be comforted there, good little boy. Or if you're meek, you're like a doormat, that somehow you're going to inherit the earth. None of that even makes sense. But when you look at it in Aramaic, it makes perfect sense.
So tell us about, for those who aren't aware, tell us about Inanna and where they can get it if anybody in the audience wants to get their own download.
Inanna is it's my newest. It's a single disc CD program. It's about an hour and 15 minutes. It's called Inanna, Living from the I Am. And one of the strongest insights about Inanna is the word when Yeshua would say things like, I am the way and the truth and life, or I am the light of the world, I am the gate. All those different, especially in the Gospel of John, he would make those phrases. One of the questions I get asked a lot is, okay, was he talking about himself? And, of course, my immediate answer is, I don't know, I wasn't there, but I'll say this. According to what's written, he was absolutely not talking about himself. If he was talking about himself, he would say Ina or Inad. Like when he says, I and God are one, I and the Father are one, Inad Wabi Chad Kanan. He's taking two things that appear to be separate, himself and what we would think of as some sort of a separate God, and actually saying these are one and the same. Now, if he was saying, as an example, I am the light of the world, Ina Nufrate Alma, in Aramaic, if he was talking about himself, he'd say Ina Nufrate Alma. But what actually is written is Ina Nufrate Alma. Now, Ina means I, as in I Gael, I Jesus. Ina, what that in fact means is the I within the I. It means literally I, the I within the I, or the I am I, which in Aramaic, in those ancient philosophies, what the I within the I was is it's conscious, active, present love. It is the, in the words of St. Francis of Assisi, I've probably said it on every show that I've done with you, where St. Francis said, what you are looking for is what is looking. It's that awareness of the I within the I, our highest awareness, the who behind the who, I say. That's conscious, active, present love. And he was literally saying it's conscious, active, present love that is the light of the world. It's conscious, active, present love that is the gate, the portal, the doorway, the opening. It is conscious, active, present love that is the bread of life. He was saying it's presence, it's being fully present in this moment. Now, he's not talking about the small I as in the physical I, Jesus. He's talking about the center point of his being. He's talking about the awareness of the one unified life. And that awareness that's within him is the same awareness that's within me, that's within you, that's within all of us. When we come from the center point, I was just talking with Marcus about how in John 3, where it says born again, it doesn't say born again in any way whatsoever in Aramaic. It actually says born from the first beginning or the first start, understanding that everything is part of one singular process of being. And when I have this need, goal, that I'm trying to get out of a particular situation or relationship or out of this present moment, that's the very thing that keeps me from being fully present in this relationship and in this present moment. So that Inanna is about living from the I am, of disconnecting, or not so much disconnecting, but detaching from I as a human and coming from a much deeper place of I as the universe, as the cosmos, as the one, and understanding that at my center, that is your center. And when I recognize that, it's not about two separate beings somehow trying to have a relationship and needing and wanting and desiring something from each other, but actually that we can be in that conscious, active, present love and have true, open relationship and a real experience rather than trying to just simply get needs met. Of course, we have basic needs as humans, but we don't understand that when we have all of this inner programming that's been sort of piled up in there from the time we were a child and we're living from that, we're thinking we need to get certain things out of situations, and it's the very things that snuff off the open relationships that we're here to experience as human beings. That's why I've said it over and over, and I'll say it on every show I do probably. I have so much immense gratitude and honor that I started with Michael's teachings and with the true Aramaic forgiveness process, because if I hadn't started with that in the Aramaic and I had actually started in the scholarly realm, I don't think I would have listened to what Michael was saying. I probably would have been so collapsed down in my ideologies and goals within the scholarly room that I wouldn't have been able to hear it. I'd say, oh, that's just hearsay, blah, blah, blah. It can't be real. It can't be real. Just another thing. So I say again, thank you for opening me up in that way. Wow, almost 20 years ago now.
Delighted, glad to be on the team. And you know, when you get back to the actual functional Aramaic, to me, that is just, it's like an idea whose time has come to planet Earth, and anybody that's spewing any kind of venom at anybody, you know, at the worst quote-unquote sinner in the world, someone who spews venom, what does that mean? That means that the one who's spewing the venom is guilty of exactly the same thing. They're playing the same game. That's why they're stuck in that realm. And there's just no genius on the planet that I've found other than the genius of Yeshua for how to resolve those issues. And, of course, I can easily understand, because canceling the goal is just doesn't make any, until you understand how the mind works, it just doesn't make any sense. Oh, this is the most precious thing I want. Why would I let go of this? And well, because every time you love it in your mind, you give up your human life. That's the really precious thing. And so being able to recapture it, and, you know, the intellectual ivory tower isn't too willing to jump into, what's the work I need to do? You mean I need to go inside of me and I need to face the rage of my fathers, the guilt of my mothers, the sadness of my ancestors? I need to go in and access those energies that are off the mark. And by the way, again, that word in Aramaic is sin. It just means an energy that's off the mark. You mean I have to go in and access those things and work through those in me? I'm going to feel those? No, let me go to my ivory tower and pontificate. I think that'll be a whole lot more fun. It's like, well, you know, it might be more fun, but it's going to kill you. Just be aware of it. You know, it might be fun, but it's the stuff that suffering and death is made of. It's time for us to wake up. This guy knew how to overcome that whole game. And as we integrate it and actually put it to work, that's the beauty of it for sure.
Mm.
So to get the new CD that's out, Dale, people can go to your website?
You go to DaleAllenHoffman.com, and it's right on the home page. When they go there, there's an image of the cover of the CD. And when you click on either the image or the link below it, it'll take you to the store, the online store. And they can either immediately download the MP3 or buy the CD version. The CDs are going to be shipped on Wednesday. So we've got like a huge box already that are already ready to roll. So they can have either the MP3 version, which they can get now, or they can get the CD version. And I'm really excited. I've been really excited to have people hear this. It's sort of like the next phase, maybe, or maybe the next paradigm shift of my work is really, 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 really boiling things down to what do they really mean. It's fine to grok and argue whatever in some sort of classroom setting of what something really means or what it supposedly means, but if there's any real, you know, vision that I have in my work, it's that I'm taking it all the way to the end. It's like I'm really bringing the meanings to a point of completion of how do we live this, not necessarily in a scholarly sense, what does it mean, blah, 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 but what do I do with it? How do I live it? And that's really what that Living from the I Am is about. The final track is called Living Undivided from the I Within the I, and it's understanding that whatever issues I have in relationship with myself, with people, with animals, with the earth, with the ecosystem, that the reason I'm having those issues, that somehow there's a core, there's a goal in my being of something that I'm trying to get out of a situation that's preventing me from actually having that open relationship with that one unified life in every area of my life. And it's just exciting work. It's awesome. I mean, I'm excited, and I love it. So
cool. Well, we're down to just a few more minutes. Anything else in particular to share with us, or you could check and see if there are any hands up in the phone queue?
Yeah, see if there's some hands up.
Okay, let's go for it. Jeannie, do you have anybody with a hand up there?
We do, and we're down to about 4 minutes, but area code 541, you're on the air. Who do we have, and where are you calling from?
Hi, I'm Julie Matthews from Ashland, Oregon. So hello. I was listening to the radio today, and there was a scientist on talking about black holes and black matter and how they're studying these things. The scientists are studying these things. They don't really know a lot, but they're starting to label and speculate and wonder and investigate. And I was thinking how interesting it might be if the work that we're doing, because it does bring us back to the I am and the now and love and creating consciously, that perhaps we are somehow affecting what they're seeing, because tending to look into the past and see whatever evidence they can see. And there's so much more I could say, but I'll let that go as just a point of reference for maybe either of you to expound on in that realm, if you understand what I mean.
You know, I've really been getting into recently, especially in the last few weeks, into the work of Stephen Hawking, and also the work of Brian Greene, who are both, of course, astrophysicists. And, you know, looking into that whole, they talk about dark matter and about black holes and how everything sort of pulls everything into a black hole, slows things down, it appears to slow down time and space at its edge. And I've really, it's funny that you mention it, because I've actually been looking at that in the spiritual sense, in the inner sense, that when I have that collapsed, not really collapsed, it's not right quite the word, but that intense goal, that not even just goal, it's like that neediness that I need out of a situation, that I need out of a particular relationship, whatever it may be, that's based in my hostilities and my fears, I literally suck in and drag everybody around me down into that slow, lethargic realm. And it's amazing how I'm looking at it on the level of astronomy with Brian Greene and Stephen Hawking, but I'm also thinking of that and feeling it out on the level of feeling. And, you know, that's the funny thing about science is as they observe, they create. And that's, you know, the interesting thing is they're trying to find something through the act of observation when what they are looking for is, in fact, what is looking, in the words of St. Francis. And that would be just purely scientific as well, the understanding that the very thing they're looking for is the very thing that is looking. It's the very thing that's doing the looking. So, you know, science is in an interesting place right now, how the spirituality, the science, it's all coming together. It's coalescing. I don't know. We'll see how the next few years open up. I'm kind of excited, like I said, for the future. So,
I'm wondering if maybe that which they cannot see and that we experience is willingness.
Could very well be.
Anyway,
what does Michael have to say about that? So,
continue.
Well, definitely willingness is, when you're thinking in terms of the cosmos, willingness is the cosmic grease. And we are down to just a minute or so left, so we're going to have to close the show out on that note. Dale, we appreciate you being here. Thank you again. www.daleallenhoffman.com is where you'll find Dale's work. And Dr. Tim, we appreciate you. Julie, nice to say hello. We hold you all in a blessing. Give the universe the best gift you can this year. Give them the best year of your eternal life. If you're in the Branson, Missouri area, join us Sunday night, 7 o'clock. You can check out the website to get the location in Branson. We'll be speaking. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.